All right, let's get into our RSN Legends series on a Wednesday morning continues. And today we head down to Moorabbin to a gentleman who played 336 games, kicked 718 goals. It was a six-time best and fairest at the Saints, a five-time All-Australian, a captain, a vice-captain amongst that. Lee Matthews Trophy winner in 2004, captain just about forever, a number one draft pick. He's done it all, the rising star. Nick Riewoldt, of course, has that resume attached to his name. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, boys. How are you?
We are going very well, thank you. We'll talk about you and all that sort of stuff, but with finals just around the corner, a day away from finals in the AFL, are you got more energy after a compacted AFL season?
Hey, I've got energy to burn at the moment. I've been cooped up inside, trying to fend off the my three lunatic sick boys. So getting into the studio, getting into work, you can call it work, talking about footy, that's like a holiday at the moment. So I'm geared up and ready to go for the finals.
Righto. Well, you've been out of the game a couple of years now. Do you miss it when it gets to this time of year?
Yeah, this is probably the time that I do miss it. To be honest, I haven't missed the actual playing as much as I thought I was going to, really, which is refreshing to be able to move on and not have that pack sort of all year round. But absolutely, this is the time of year when you want to be playing, and it's been a long time between drinks for St Kilda supporters. So unfortunately, I didn't get to do that in the last 6 years of my career. But this is what you play for. And while it looks a little bit different for all of us, and for those of us that love watching and calling and going to games, it's going to take on an entirely different feel. But for the players, the feeling of anticipation now with the bye and the lead up to this week, that would be real for them, and they just want to get out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking forward to seeing what is on show as well for the finals campaign through the AFL. With your story, Rui, and we know you're a proud Tasmanian and all that sort of stuff, but you moved to the Gold Coast, I think, when you were about 9 years old. How much footy Aussie rules was up there when you were growing up?
So it was clearly pre Brisbane Lions dominance. So there wasn't much, to be honest. I mean, I sort of tell the story that A lot of my friends from school, they probably don't even know what happened to me. I was there 1 minute and gone the next. I'd been drafted, and no one even really that I went to school with knew that I played Aussie rules football. So it was it was around. You had to sort of work to find other people that were interested in the game. But once you found a network, like I went down to Broadbeach Junior Cricket Club to start and played cricket and loved it. And all of a sudden, one day, sort of later in the cricket season, a few of our boys weren't at training. I looked over to the big oval and they were all running around doing a warm-up lap for the start of the footy season. And so that was pretty much sort of how I got reintroduced to footy back up in Queensland after having a few years off after we moved from Tassie. And the game grew. The game grew absolutely while I was a kid up there. But really, once I got drafted and then the Brisbane Lions had their three-peat and I started coming back to the coast, that's when I realised just how much the game had actually taken off up there. And then, obviously, supercharged with all the AFL investment and eventually a team.
So I want, Nick, you to share with our listeners the story, because I don't know whether you had a choice as such, but at 15, you're in state squads for cricket. You're clearly a talented young Australian footballer as well. Was it a situation where you had to consciously make a decision as to what way you would go, or was it that footy was always the way you wanted to go?
No, I was a late bloomer with footy, to be honest. So cricket was always the path that I was more likely to go down and was more committed to, really. I was better at cricket. So a late developer, a late boomer, and then, you know, footy sort of clicked for me around that 16, 17 year, and ultimately the choice was probably made for me in the end. The full stop on my cricket career was we played in a premiership for Southport, and the celebrations got a little bit willing, but I knew the next day I had to drive up to Brisbane to take part in a sort of a possibles, probables squad match for the state under 17 trials, and they were picking a side from 22 anyway. Dad came and picked me up from the Southall Footy Club at about 5 a.m. I hadn't been to bed, obviously. Went up, got thrown the new ball, and started by bowling 5 cross seam wides. And that was pretty much it for me. I thought, okay, I reckon I'm a reasonable chance to be drafted. And if you do the maths back then, like this is pre Big Bash and all of those other avenues for cricket. You know, you needed to be in the top 15 in the country if you're going to make a really good career out of cricket. But yeah, you know, there were 600 AFL footballers running around, so the maths were pretty easy.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell us about the time you were drafted. It was obviously you and Justin Kaczynski. You had the knee injury, which I think a lot of people forget about. So it wasn't necessarily smooth sailing for a number one draft pick.
No, far from it. So just doing a quad stretch in my first pre-season down here, and it was exciting. It was exciting times to come to the Saints. Malcolm Blight had just been announced as the coach. We had a raft of new recruits, Hamill and Gehrig and myself and Justin, through the draft with early picks. And just felt a little pop while I was doing a quad stretch. So missed the majority of that first season with, I think I had 3 or 4 knee surgeries that year, just trying to sort out what was happening. In the end, had most of my medial cartilage taken out, which would sort of snowball over the next 20 years to the point that even sort of now it bothers me a little bit. But, yeah, it was frustrating. Cozzy came out and won the Rising Star that year, and living in a house where we were both so competitive, and Cozzy was going off to games every week. I was going off to the swimming pool to do rehab sessions. That was difficult, a little bit frustrating. You know, we like to rub each other's nose in it a little bit, so that, you know, that got a bit tense at times. But, yeah, that was, I think, in a way, almost a bit of a blessing for me, the fact that it didn't come easy right at the start, and developed some pretty good habits early on with respect to, you know, looking after my body and professionalism that ended up carrying me through.
Who'd you latch onto? Who are the players that you sort of latched onto to lead you through that charge and give you those habits that you became so well known for?
You had the full variety of options early days down at the Saints. So, you know, we had Spider and Baz and a few of those boys that had those more bad boy type reputations who were great to the young players, you know, who took us under their wing and looked after us and made sure we had a good time. But for me, it was Aaron Hamill. He was the player that I identified pretty early as someone that I wanted to emulate and model myself on, just in terms of the preparation and the way he went about it. So those first few years in the system, he was like a big brother to me. He still is, and he was absolutely critical in just showing me what it was to really train hard and work hard. And he made me realise things about myself that I didn't know I could do, just in terms of how hard you can actually push yourself. So he was, he was a huge influence.
And then you worked out, must have worked out pretty quickly that you were able to translate that onto the field. A lot of people can train hard but not be able to translate that onto the field. You were able to do that and break opponents with your work rate. When did you really work out that was one of your key assets and really exploit opposition on the back of it?
Yeah, it was probably third or fourth year in, I think, when I realised that within games I could go to places that other players couldn't come with me, and it was all about doing things at really high intensity. So it was really once the proper video analysis came into the game, because early on you do your game review, it was all on VHS, so there was no behind the goals. So you couldn't really identify those running patterns, and you know, you'd get on the end of it and you'd mark it, but you'd never really sure how far an opponent was behind or anything like that. So once the introduction of behind the goals footage of proper reviewing tools came in, you could see what really worked for you on review, and it was probably then that I was able to really analyse my own game and identify my own strengths and try and build a really consistent performance model around that.
And the team had been built around that too, and not just you, but some other key players. Now, Ross comes in and takes charge, and then you have this amazing era between sort of 08 to 2011, I imagine is probably the window, that four-year window. And that 09 season, Rui, I mean, you go through that, it was phenomenal in so many ways. But for 18 games on the trot, was it for the Saints in that year? It was a remarkable run from start to pretty much the end of the season. What was that like, being a part of that all-conquering, that all-dominant team throughout that home and away season?
Yeah, incredible. It was probably, the year probably started in 2004 under Tomo when we played in a prelim in 04, prelim in 05, and, you know, got so close on both of those occasions. You know, I think it was a goal to Port and then a couple of goals to Sydney, who both went on and won the flag, and then finals again in six. Tomo got moved on. Rossi came in. So seven we missed. And then, yeah, as you said, 8, 9, 10, 11. But 2009, it almost, you didn't really know you were in the midst of something special until you got about halfway through the season, really. Because what was phenomenal about that was, yeah, we were 13 games into the season undefeated, but so were Geelong, which I don't think had ever been done before, that two sides had gotten that deep and then faced each other. So that was really around the time that we thought, okay, we are the real deal here. Because up until then, they were still the kings. You know, they're the ones that had been there consistently the previous 2 years. And even going back now and reflecting on that sort of in the latter part of my career at St Kilda with some of the Saints boys, you know, we you'd speak about our midfield through that era with Hayes, Del Santo, Goddard, Montagna, Ball, all of these. But they sort of say, well, how did you guys not win it? The Geelong midfield was pretty handy too. You know, they had Ablett, Selwood, Bartell, Corey, Enright, like all of these sort of boys running around. So it was a great era. You know, we were such a strong team. We were probably just a bit unfortunate that we didn't capitalise on the day, and we came up against a side that was a remarkable side as well. But I've got so many great memories and friendships and relationships that come just with that shared experience of having you know, been on the edge in terms of weighing everything out there for so long, for a 3 or 4 year period. And we knew throughout that whole period that there were no guarantees, that if we did all the work, all you'd give yourself was the best possible chance to win it. And we did that a few times, and unfortunately we just couldn't capitalise and achieve what we were all chasing.
Nick, as you've explained so well, you sort of had those two eras, the Grant Thomas era and the Ross Lyon era, and both were successful eras. But they were both sort of different. Like, you know, with Grant, you're so good to watch because you entertained, you kicked big scores, and you played in some amazing games, and you played in an amazing forward line that meant you could kick big scores. And then Ross, maybe a little bit more sustainable, correct me if I'm wrong, with the way you play, but it was more structured and so forth. Was one more enjoyable than the other to play, or they were both different and they were both enjoyable?
They were both enjoyable, but in different ways. I mean, the year under Tomo, like I think 2004, Fraser kicked a ton, I kicked 70, Milne kicked 60, and Hamill might have kicked 40. Like we just kicked so many goals. It was unbelievable, and that was a show in itself. Like having Fraser standing at full forward, and I could just run around the centre forward, basically turn around and blast the ball in blind, and know that he was going to monster someone and get on the end of it. Like that was fun. Like footy was different then as well. This was before the full zones, so it was a different game. Like I'd hate to start my career now with the way footy's played, particularly as a key forward. It's so difficult, but. But then the Rossi era, there was a real edge throughout that period as well. But it was fun because we were good. You know, when you're winning and you sort of have that us against them mentality. You know, the bubble, we really thrived on that. So it was a different kind of enjoyment, probably more a satisfaction than a period of fun, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, equally, you know, footy was more fun early. Like the stuff that Tomo did with us as a group as well, taking us away on those training camps. You know, we went to London 1 year. We were trained by Sebastian Coe and Daley Thompson. We went to South Africa 1 year, China. You know, all footy was just it was a bit different back then. It's still probably as fun a job as you're ever gonna have. But I think there are degrees within that.
And your emotions at the siren in that first grand final in 2010, I don't think I've ever heard you talk about it, I must admit. You might have, and I just wasn't listening. But how did you feel when that siren rang and it was a draw?
2010? Probably like everyone, just a bit of a state of disbelief. You know, like there was almost like a bit of a sort of a sick, you know, sort of sense of humour to it as well. Like I walked over and saw Andrew Demetrio grinning like a Cheshire cat, because I'm sure he knew exactly what that meant to the AFL's bottom line to get another grand final. But, you know, meanwhile, Nick Maxwell was carrying on like a pork chop, saying they need to change the rules, we've got to play extra time. But, yeah, it was just one of those things where you're almost just a witness to what was unfolding. And then the chaos down in the rooms afterwards, with the change rooms all being flooded, had to move across to the old Southern Stand rooms. It was bizarre. It was bizarre. And, you know, now we're etched in history as a team to play in the last ever drawn grand final. So that's a nice little, consolation prize from the AFL. That's good. And, you know, the year before, Tommy Hawkins hit the post in a grand final, and now we have a goal of him. So it's nice to have been the guinea pig on the greatest day. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
No, you can't hear that at all in your voice. And you're doing a nice job of hiding it. It's an amazing career, and one that they'll talk about for years, and hopefully St Kilda get that premiership sooner rather than later, and you can enjoy that as well. Can I ask you, just your transition to the media? I mean, I don't think in my time in footy, or certainly in the last 20 years, I've seen anyone be as natural as you and as comfortable doing what you do. You're on the couch on Monday nights, AFL 360 with Robbo and Jared, of course, game days on Fox Footy. You're doing a hell of a job. You seem to really enjoy it. Is that fair to assess?
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's a lot of fun. So I love sort of being able to come at it from the other side. And probably the big thing is, you know, when I first started at Fox Footy...
You still with us? What's happened to our man? There's a little someone.
I think he's got one of the kids parental got the phone. Type activities going on.
Some of the kids is on the phone. Oh, I'm not sure what's happened to our man, Nick. That might be it. That could be a very unusual way to end an RSN Legend Series interview, with a little bit of kid action on the phone. It's all over. It's all over and being told. So great to have a chat to Nick Riewoldt.
Let's take a break.
Well, we won't be coming back from it either. You can catch Nick, by the way, as I mentioned, on the couch, of course. I wanted to ask him, is it a comfy couch? That was one of the key questions for the whole bloody thing. And he's not there. He's done. You can catch him on the couch on Monday nights, AFL 360, of course, through the week. And dominating proceedings with his assessment, his analysis on game day on Fox Footy, on Channel 504 on Foxtel, of course, kicks off tomorrow night with the finals campaign. So you can see Rui do his thing there.